I'm Bob McDonald, and you're listening to Quirks and Quarks, the national science program heard every Saturday across Canada on CBC Radio 1, live on the internet at cbc.ca, and across North America on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. Coming up next, Learning to Share. Boy, have I got a bargain for you. It's a beautiful timeshare on a gorgeous tropical island. And all you have to do is, well, share it with a bunch of birds. Now, I know that's not the usual pitch to get you into a timeshare, but these birds are actually very good at sharing their homes. Dr. Vicky Friesen is a professor of biology at Queen's University who studies the band-rumped storm petrel. It's a tropical bird that has no problem sharing its nest while it's away. And while this peculiar form of hospitality might be interesting in itself, Dr. Friesen thinks it might also help prove a 150-year-old theory put forward by Charles Darwin. Dr. Friesen, welcome to Quirks and Quarks.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, I've never heard of a band-rumped storm petrel before. What kind of bird is it?
They're small seabirds. There's actually millions of them, but because they're small, you don't see them very much, and they spend most of their life far out at sea, so you, again, don't see them very much.
Now, when you say small, how small are they?
Oh, about 45 grams.
Wow, so they're like the size of a songbird?
Yeah, I guess they're songbirds.
What color are they?
Oh, they're kind of a drab gray with a few white markings on them. They get their name, petrel, after St. Peter, who's said to have walked on the water. When these birds are foraging for food, they patter their feet on the water. So I guess they're a little bit like St. Peter in that way.
Wow. And the band rumped, there's a band around their rump?
So they have a white band at the top of their tail, and that's what helps us distinguish them from other types of storm petrels when they're at sea.
Where would I find them?
They breed on tropical and subtropical islands in the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, and so in the breeding season you can find them on those islands, but when they're not breeding they pretty much abandon their islands and just fly around and forage at sea in tropical and subtropical areas.
Oh, so they only spend part of their lives on the island, the rest are at sea.
Yeah, that's right. Like most seabirds, they only come to land to breed, and they pretty much leave as soon as they can. They're not comfortable on land. They're very vulnerable to predators.
So how exactly do they share their homes?
Well, the band-rumped storm petrels are interesting because, they, as I said, they nest throughout the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. But in five archipelagos, there's one group of storm petrels that will come in and nest in burrows. And when they're done laying their eggs and raising their chicks and they go off to sea, then another set of storm petrels come in and they lay their eggs and raise their chicks, often in the very same burrows. And then they go off to sea and the first set comes back again and repeats the cycle.
Well, what was your interest in these birds?
Several years ago, one of my co-authors approached me at a conference and described this scenario where the two different sets of birds breed in the same island at different times of year. And they actually thought at the time that those two types may have arisen sympatrically. That means that they actually arose in the same place. And that kind of perked my ears a bit because it suggests sympatric speciation, which is quite a controversial model of speciation.
What do you mean by that?
Okay, so big terms there. Speciation is the process by which new species arise. And by and large, if you define species as groups of organisms that don't reproduce with each other, so they either don't recognize each other as potential mates, like a dog and a cat won't recognize each other as potential mates, or if they do mate, then their offspring either die or are infertile. Something like a horse and a donkey might mate, but then the mule is infertile. So the process of forming new species is actually the process of forming these barriers to reproduction between groups of organisms. So what we're looking at is the origin of these barriers to reproduction between organisms. And when we talk about sympatric speciation, that means sim means the same, and patros means homeland. It means that these barriers to reproduction have arisen in one place, basically.
But you're saying that they all live on the same island, or they use the same island for their breeding sites, but there's a possibility there might be two distinct species because they breed at different times of year.
That's right.
Now, how is this way of turning into two different species different from how other animals would turn into different species.
The generally recognized way that species form is what's called the allopatric model. So allo meaning different and patros meaning homeland. What's generally thought to happen is that you have a parental species, which is widespread, and then there's, for example, a mountain range comes up or a river or some kind of geographic barrier that the organisms can't pass over. And so if you have, they can't move from one place to the other for a long period of time, then they tend to diverge genetically, and they might adapt to different conditions, and eventually they just don't recognize each other as potential mates anymore, or if they do, again, they can't produce fertile offspring.
Now, where does Darwin come into all this?
Well, Darwin actually thought that species could arise sympatrically in the same place. And he kind of described generally how it might happen. But Darwin, of course, didn't know about DNA and didn't know about genetics. And when people started understanding how genetics work and they kind of looked at his model, they said, I don't think that can happen because of just the way that genes work. And if you have any kind of genetic exchange at all between the two populations, then they can't evolve this reproductive isolation, so they can't evolve into new species. So even though he had this idea, subsequent researchers came along and said, no, it can't happen that way. It's just not possible theoretically, except under a few special circumstances.
What did you do to try to prove whether or not this had happened on this island with these birds?
So we went and sampled birds from both the hot and cool seasons from the five archipelagos, and as well as from a few other places, and reconstructed the evolutionary tree for these animals. And what we found, it's a little bit complicated, but basically the hot and cool season populations from an archipelago group together. So, for example, in the Galapagos, the hot and cool season populations are each other's closest relatives, so that suggests they arose within the Galapagos. In Cape Verde, the hot and cool populations are each other's closest relatives, so that suggests that they arose within Cape Verde. It's sort of speciation in action. That's one of the really interesting things about this system, is that in the five archipelagos, we're kind of seeing different stages of the speciation process, all the way from the Galapagos, where they're really only just separated from each other. In Madeira, they've been separated from each other for maybe 70,000 years, but in the Azores and Cape Verde, the seasonal populations are a good species, so speciation has been completed in those two archipelagos.
Wow. So what's the picture then, the sequence of events in your mind that happened on these islands with these birds?
There's a couple of possibilities. Probably the simplest and the most popular one is that there was competition for either food or nest burrows on the island. So there probably wasn't a sudden switch of a bunch of birds from one season to the other, but over time, young birds may have found that the feeding was better in a different season, and so they switched their reproduction to be in a different season from the rest of the population.
Does this change our ideas of how new species come about?
I think it broadens the possibilities. It indicates that speciation is a lot more interesting than we thought, that, rather than just having to have some geographic barrier to dispersal, that there's other ways that species can arise. And there's other models as well, which are being confirmed through time as people study the natural world more.
Amazing stuff. Dr. Friesen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Vicki Friesen is a professor of biology at Queen's University in Kingston.